Welcome to the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast, where we untangle the past, rewrite the present, and reclaim our future. I am your host, Tammy Vincent, and together we will break free from old patterns, heal wounds, and create new narratives. Are you ready to transform the effects of your dysfunctional past into your superpowers? Are you excited to get back in touch with your true, authentic self? If so, then hit subscribe and join me weekly on the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast. Here we will learn from experts as well as experienced thrivers how to turn our trials into smiles while living our most authentic and joyful lives. Well, hello again, everybody. Welcome back. Today we have with us Rodney Lawson. He grew up in a verbally abusive and alcoholic father. Not easy. However, this adverse childhood experience molded him into a unique individual in two ways, which we're going to talk about. First, his trauma led him to become impeccable driving. He had an impeccable drive for success, let's say. He climbed up the corporate ladder very quickly. He excelled. He went from a very young age, he went from going into entry-level sales to running a Fortune 100 telecom company. He did amazing things. He was promoted 14 times over 12 years. He did have to support himself after high school, so he pursued his bachelor's in management and MBA in international business, both disciplines with honors, and as a full-time executive. So we can't say it can't be done, right? Next thing that happened is it made him defiant in questioning the norm regarding injustice situations. And I absolutely love that. And I'm going to just let you describe what that means, but I didn't even have to read your bio. And what I'm assuming you do now is you take the people that thinks they don't have it or can't do it for whatever reason, and you prove them wrong. Welcome, Rodney. Just go ahead and tell us a little bit about your story and then let's get going.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, you went through the bio, but let me share a little bit more, go into a little bit more commentary. The two things, you talked about the impeccable drive, but it also gave me a newfound respect for respecting people overall. And that's because, you know, going through my ACE, my adverse childhood experience, I grew up, you know, with an alcoholic father who was abusive, had a violent personality, addicted to gambling. And you learn to adapt. You learn to watch. You learn to observe because you don't want to make that person upset. And these are all skills that are naturally developed and honed in above the average individual. And so it gave me the opportunity to learn really fast and quickly and adapt to certain situations. But because I was treated in that way, it also gave me a clear understanding of what respect is. And I knew I never wanted anyone to feel disrespected because of how I was made to feel. And so as I pursued up the corporate ladder, I can always, you know, I can sit here and say that in the 33 some odd years in management, 23 as an executive, I've never treated anyone in the corporate world with a lack of dignity and respect. Now, it doesn't mean I didn't hold people accountable and terminate people. Absolutely, I did. But they always had my ultimate respect. And it was because I knew how it felt. And I think that that was one of the keys that I can look at my father and say, oh, you know, this was horrible what was happening to me. And from a villainous standpoint, but at the same time, I can also look at it as he's my hero because of what he gave me.
Right.
Right. And so because I was able to impact so many people in my life from a positive standpoint, I look at what he gave me was more of a gift than a detriment. And I got to tell you, Tim, it took me a while to get there. You know, It wasn't recently. It wasn't until recently that I just forgave my father, to be honest with you. I had a hard time forgiving him for a lot of the things that he did not do that I felt that he should have, that my friends and their fathers did. And I would watch it and I would see it. I'll give you an example. I was really good at playing football growing up in high school. And before high school, and my father very rarely attended any of the games because he had his own agenda. And even at the practices, I would see the other fathers there watching the sons, and they would always come up to me and like, you're really good. you know, wow, you had a really good game. And you longed for that from your own father. And so it was that rejection that I was always striving for, trying to overcome, that I sought for from him. And so that played a factor also. All of these things molded me into who I am today.
Yes.
I'm a rejection overcomer. I'm a strategist. I'm a injustice equalizer. And I am, I would say, very, very convicted in my values and who I am as an individual. So while I can blame my father, I don't anymore, because it's not what was done to me by him. It's what was done for me.
For you. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love that expression. I love that saying. It's one of my favorite. I think I've said it three times today.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It happens. I mean, things happen, bad things happen, and you just have to take what it was given you. I mean, people find the positive in everything. And, you know, they have all these little cliche statements like what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And like all these statements that you want to like shake people when they say, but there's wisdom in them, you know, take your mess into turn your mess into a message. You
mm-hmm.
know, I mean, that's why we have all this, because you are very resilient. And that's why we have these podcasts. That's why we have people talking and advocating, because it took you at some point, you had to say, okay, this is not right, and I want to be different.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, what was that moment? Did you have a moment where you were like, okay, I'm not going to ever do this to someone?
Yes. It was a moment I'll never forget. I wrote a, it's in the first chapter of my book, Broken, Inspired, and Driven. My father and my older brother, I have a brother that's a year older. We participated in karate, martial arts. So when I was 8, my brother was 9, we joined karate school. My father joined a couple months later, and he loved it because it was, you know, the fighting part of it. He just took to it, right? So that was the one area where the three of us, where we really connected, right? That he was around in that area, right? So, So we accumulated a lot of trophies. We would practice Monday through Friday at the dojo, and every Saturday we were going to a tournament, finding a tournament to compete in. And so we accumulated this trophy room of about 300 trophies. Well, father got angry one day because one of his trophies had gotten broken. He didn't know how. And of course he was, you know, drinking heavily at the time, and he just picked the trophy up and he just hurled it into the trophy room and broke about 30 or 40 trophies. And I couldn't believe what he had just did. You know, my brother's trophies are in there. My trophies are in there. He didn't care. It was just total lack of respect for our stuff and the hard work that we put in the fight. And so I go in there and I started to pick up my trophies, and I'm going to take them to my room. And he rushes in there and he says, colorful language, which I won't use on the podcast, "Don't you touch any trophy in there. You didn't pay for any one of those bleep, bleep, bleep trophies." That was one of the lowest points in my life, and it still affects me today. I went back to my room, and I literally punched the wall as hard as I could, to where as I busted the 4 top knuckles and 3 of the bottom ones, and my hand was just bleeding. And it was almost like an out-of-body experience, because I didn't realize what I did. And when I finally came to a few seconds later, you know, my sister heard the loud boom and had knocked pictures off the wall on the adjacent room to my bedroom. And she just said, "Come on, come on, come on." And she took me out, my younger sister took me outside in the backyard to talk and to calm down. That moment, Tracy, I knew that I had within me that he had within him. And I never wanted that to come out, or wanted that feeling again. And so I knew that it was going to take a lot of work to try and corral that, right? It's emotional, what do
regulate.
I call it? Yeah, emotional regulation, right? And, you know, my father didn't have much of that. And, you know, it taught me a valuable lesson that day, you know, that I do have triggers and I can get to that point. And so what I realized later on in life is that I had to come up with a solution on how to combat these situations where my triggers were tapped into. And I came up with this philosophy that I created. I call it the PRT 123 method. And I said, you know what, you're a smart guy. You've done all this stuff in the corporate world, and you've designed training curriculums and taught them. You can design something for you. So I designed something short, and it was the PRT 123. So the P is an acronym for pause, respond, and take. So whenever my triggers are tapped into, I pause. That's the P. Then I respond when I'm able to, but it has to be a response with grace and candor. And then whatever my response is, I take full accountability for it. So if I did it well, I need to pat myself on the back. I need to reward myself. If I didn't do it so well, then I need to beat myself up a little bit and say, okay, how could I have done that better? Because see, sometimes when you respond, even though you might think it's done with grace and gander, because you're not yelling, you're not cursing, you're not using all of this colorful language, you're not rambunctious in a way that you're coming across. Sometimes you may say something subtly sarcastic, right?
Absolutely.
Because you're thinking about it's about you, but it can't be about you. Your response has to be done with grace and gander, right? And then you can take accountability for doing it right and rewarding yourself. The 1, 2, 3 part is the communication piece. And this is something that, you know, I teach also in my courses. The one stands for what you say. The second step, the two, stands for how you say it. And the three stands for, did they take in that information? See, so many times when we get in these heated arguments, especially when our triggers are tapped into, we only focus on what we say on the one, because all we want to do is get our point across, right? No, it's my, I got to get my point across. It's more effective if not only do you get your point across, but you say it in a way so that you get it across, right? So the first step is saying it, because some people won't say it. They'll hide from it. They'll run from it. It all depends on how it affects their triggers. Because there were times when I would say, according to my triggers, I would like fight back, or I would stick my head in the sand, or I would run. And so it's important that, you know, that first step is, you know, you have to say it, right? And then immediately the second step is how you say it. You know, are you saying it from the heart? Is it coming from a place of love? Right? Is it coming from a place of vulnerability? And I'll give you an example. I was having a conversation with my sister, and you know, incidentally, I tapped into one of her triggers, and she got, you know, kind of really upset at that moment, and started to raise her voice, elevate her voice, and come at me. And my response after my brief pause was, "Wow," I said, "you know, that really hurt me, what you said." And immediately when I said that, it took her to a place of, well, let me understand where he's coming from, because I didn't want to hurt him. Right? Now, in the past, before I worked on this, that conversation would have taken a totally different turn. We would have been yelling at one another. And so, that's just something that I put in place, the PRT 123, that helps with those triggers.
I love it. And it's funny because we were just talking about it yesterday, and we were talking to somebody just asked me. They were like, well, what do I do when I first, you know, I'll say something and then I'll beat myself up about it because it won't be nice, it won't be kind. Well, the very first step is can I just say it? Your brain, and that's your pause. You know,
Right.
take a
Right.
second, say anything, because your gut reaction when you get upset is to, like you said, just it's about you, it's about defending yourself, it's about you taking control. And it was so funny. She's like, you know, you're right, because 9 times out of 10, if you just take that second to think about it, you're probably going to have enough time to de-escalate yourself just enough to think about the fact that if you say something, it's going to have repercussions. Whatever comes out of your mouth is permanent. So, yeah, I love it. So you teach that in a course, in a class, and just all your clients, everything.
It's actually a part of my courses, because, you know, when you're looking at the gamut of management and leadership, it's not just in one or two areas. And so when I go in and I'm working with someone, you know, different people have different areas that they need to focus on, to get the maximum output out of their leadership ability. And so I find that, you know, it helps sometimes to teach people what is the best way to communicate, right? And how. And so, you know, after creating that, yeah, I incorporated it into my workshops and my programs.
Oh, that's awesome. Because even just, I mean, we live in a trauma induced world, honestly, and everybody's got triggers. Everybody's got stuff that happened to them. And communication is a huge thing. Like you said, I think you said somewhere right in the beginning of your PRT 1, 2, 3, most people don't even say it. Most
right.
people haven't even gotten to the point where they have the guts to stand up for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking, I mean, to be a leader that goes at that with that compassion and with that mentality is what the world needs. Because if you're as the leader shooting off quickly, then the person is going, there's a lot of people that are going to take it very defensively that are not, because they don't know how to communicate. So there's a lot, you know, that's why you go into a huge corporation, you go into, where was I a couple months ago? And I was in a big group of people, and literally there was like two people or three women in the bathroom complaining about their boss and how they yelled at them and they gave them stink eye and they just, you know, and they were crying and all upset, and all of that can be avoided.
Yes. And I see that. You know, it's funny you mention that because I see that all over the place, which is one of the reasons why I started my company. I got really frustrated in the corporate world, just seeing so much narcissism and seeing how bad and poorly people are treated. And then companies need it more so than ever for two reasons. COVID, right? After COVID, individuals were working from home, and now companies want them to come back into the office. And it's tough to put that genie back in a bottle, right? Mm-hmm. The second thing is the millennials are hitting, you know, the workspace, and they have this mentality that if I don't like it here, I'll go someplace else, right? They're not raised with the mentality of go to school, find a good job, and retire in that job. And
right.
Because of that, leadership has to change. And if it doesn't, that's where you see companies are losing market share, they're losing clients because they can't keep employees. Right.
Right.
And so this is why I'm teaching these courses from a leadership capacity.
Yeah, and it goes both ways. You know, you have the leaders that are all saying, well, people don't want to work anymore. But it,
right.
it goes both ways. You have those people that don't, the entitled, you know, you have those people. But
mm-hmm.
if people go to into a nurturing, safe place, they will stay.
Yes, absolutely.
If they feel like they're producing and they're being, then they're contributing, they will stay if they're treated well, without a doubt.
Yeah, in one of my courses, I go through essentially teaching leaders that the foundation is loyalty, right? You have to build loyalty with your employees. And I walk through, like, how do you do that? What are some of the things that you can implement and all of that? And what sits on top of that loyalty is influence. So if your foundation of loyalty is cracked and have chinks in it, then guess what? Your level of influence isn't going to be that much. And because of those two parameters that I talked about, COVID and millennials, if your foundation is cracked and you don't have the loyalty, you know, chances are it's going to be hard to increase your performance with that group or sustain performance for that matter. So it's just sharing those principles with people and giving them tools and techniques on how to continuously enhance that, because it's a moving paradigm, right? It doesn't stand still. It's like everything in this universe, it changes. And it's either gonna get better or worse. And it all depends upon how you affect it, right?
Right, absolutely. You said something else that I kind of like too. And you said that part of what you do is to take the, you know, after seeing the injustices out there and everything, is to take people, I think you mentioned in your thing, like single parents on welfare, people like that. So talk about that.
Oh gosh, yeah. I was with a company probably about 20 years ago, and we built a facility in Newport News, Virginia. And we hired about 1,100 employees at that location. And of course, the company, I did the research, and they were looking at three locations around the United States. They chose it because it was one of the ones that they felt had the highest propensity for bringing people in that wanted to work, that were hard workers. They just didn't have much of an opportunity because that area was, you know, it was a naval base area for a shipyard area. And so we go in there and we hire these employees, and Man, I hired individuals that had come off of welfare. I hired individuals who were, and I'll use a colloquial term here, street hustlers. They sold drugs. And but I saw something in them. You know, in the interview, I'm looking at character, I'm looking at values, and I'm telling them, like, look, we can take these same skills that you have, and I can show you how to do it the right way, and I can show you how to be successful. And I got to tell you, Tammy, these individuals now are all across the United States working for different companies in VP roles, director roles, senior VP roles, executive directors. They're working for all of these different companies because we took the time to show them that the tools that they had, the skill sets that they had already inside of them, we show them how to apply that to the corporate world. You know, and it all comes down to, in the corporate world, is two things, right? It's your performance and your behavior. A lot of people just look at the performance, but it's the behavior. So if on a scale from 1 to 10, if I'm a 10 in performance, but only a 1 in behavior, I'm not going to go very far. And we see that with people that are extremely talented today, like athletes. You know, they make a lot of money because they're a 10, but then their behavior will put them in a position where the money's taken away, or they're cut from the team, traded for to another team. We see it, you know, with entertainers. We see it, you know, when they have downfalls. And then we have people that are, their behavior is impeccable. You know, it's a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10, but their performance is not there. And so what we have to do is understand exactly where we are on the chart and work with those individuals in those particular areas. And that's how I manage to get people promoted up the chain. You know, companies, they look at talent, image, and exposure. Those are the three things that an executive would look at and say, okay, is this person someone that we want to bring up the chain and promote to high levels? Your talent, your image, and your exposure. And I have a course wrapped all around that as well, from an individual standpoint, because I also do individual coaching as well, right? It's not just going into corporations and coaching and you know, leaders and groups, right? I do individual coaching as well.
Nice. Yeah, I love that you used that example because I know, like, in just growing up with my mom, she was a child psychiatrist, absolutely brilliant. I mean, one of the smartest people I ever met in my life. But boy, she could play a head game. So,
Oh,
and
imagine.
being alcoholic and being manipulative and being a child psychiatrist, it's like I got hit with all kinds of tools like against me. So people laugh, and when I go into, when I did sales for a little bit, and I'm like, I'm a great salesman because boy, did I learn to manipulate with a smile on my face. And it's like, they used to joke, they're like, oh God, you can sell anybody anything with a smile on your face. They, you could fire someone and they walk out thanking you for the opportunity. And I'm like, hey, you got to take what God gave you and, learn how to spin it, work with it. So I always use that example because I remember when I used to lay people off and they used to be like hugging me and thanking me for the opportunity. Then when they would leave and my coworkers and my partner would say, like, do they know they just got fired? I'm like, yeah, this made it their idea and it sent them out happy. It was all good. It's just kind of funny how I used to do that. But that was just one small example. But like you said, take what you learn from your adversity, because you learn a lot of lessons in adversity. There's no doubt about that.
You know
So
what I
much.
found? Go ahead, go ahead.
Go ahead, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know what I found is that these same gifts that we were given, whether they came through an adverse situation or in some other form, they also have it's like a yin and a yang approach. They also have a downside. And so those same gifts that we have, we can utilize them to really, really help people and grow people, like you making people feel good. Because they weren't the right fit for that job. And I commend, you know, some people, the person isn't the right fit for the job, and they make them feel so bad about it as they're, you know, throwing them out the door, you know, terminating it. So I commend you for that. But at the same time, sometimes those gifts have another side, right? And what we have to do is we can't really get rid of the bad side. We have to learn to live with it. You know, one of my favorite movies, it's a Marvel movie, Doctor Strange, is where he's meeting with the Ancient One. And the Ancient One says this quote in there, and I teared up in the movie theaters when I saw it. She said, "We can never get rid of our demons, but we can learn to live above them." It gives me chills to this day when I say that, because that's one of the things that I knew I had to do. I knew I had to keep the gifts and utilize them to help people, but at the same time, I didn't want to hurt people with them as well. So I had to be responsible, and I had to learn to live above the demonic part of the gifts.
Right.
Because they never.
And that just goes with the choice and your integrity and your values and everything that you talked about. Mm-hmm. I mean, you pick people, and you know, you can walk in, you can walk into a room, or you can interview 20 people in a group interview or whatever it is, and you can look around and know who's coming to it heartfelt, and who you just know. And those are the people that are going to use those gifts to do good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because if they have that character in them, their values are set a certain way, you know, then all we have to do is pull that out and show them those what the gifts can do to help other people.
Exactly.
And the fulfillment that they get from that is movement, right? Towards motivation, towards them seeking and wanting more. You know, we spoke about the individuals that I hired in that particular area. Well, we hire people from all across the country, really. But some of those individuals, it was showing them that, you know, some of the females, you know, would tell stories about how they were on welfare before they got the job there. And now, you know, some of them are directors, executive directors, senior directors, VPs.
Hey, Ralph Lauren only wore hand-me-down clothes for how many years, you know?
Absolutely. And you know what? I was able to do that, Timmy, because I'm a living witness. You know, when I first started in the corporate world, people don't know this, but I talk with a lot of slang, a lot of jargon, use a lot of colloquial terms. And in my first meeting with my supervisor, she asked us to write down, you know, everyone on the team to write down two goals. And one of the goals I put vice president, and I put it in the company in parentheses, whether it was there or someplace else. And finally, she got tired of beating around the bush after asking me, why did I choose that? And she just said to me, you might want to choose something that's a little more realistic. Yeah, I was floored. I was crushed. But the defiance in me that I got from my father, inside, I was saying, woman, you don't know me. You don't know what I'm capable of. You don't know what I've been through. You don't know my why for doing this. I'm doing this because I want a better life. I don't want to live the life that I lived, you know, growing up where, you know, you're in Buffalo, New York, and in the wintertime, there are times when you get your gas cut off. You can't stay in that place, yeah. You know, or electricity is cut off, you know, and it wasn't because the parents didn't have the money. It was because they had the money, but your father took it and decided to, you know, go gambling with it. You know, I didn't want to live like that, you know, and so I there's a lot of things that I've done in my life. I can tell you that, you know, next week I turn 57 years old. And I've never taken a single drink of alcohol in my life. And I don't discourage anybody. I don't disparage anybody for drinking alcohol. I'm around a lot of people that drink alcohol. Trust me, in the corporate world, you know, in college, you know, I've gone to a lot of parties. I was pressured a lot, but never took a single drink. Never been intoxicated in my life. And I never will because of what I experienced, right?
Right.
You know, so, and that's just another one of those things that, you know, I got from that ace, adverse experience. Yeah,
and that's good because it's, you know, everybody has that story, and it's, you can do one or two things with a story. I always say you can be, it's again, those cliches, you can be a victor, you can be a victim. You can use it to say, this is what I'm not going to do, or you can just fall into it and use it as an excuse. And that's,
absolutely.
You know, it goes back to the people. You find someone on welfare, a single mom, and here she is, and she's pretty beat down, pretty low on herself, pretty, you know, she's had this stuff. Where do you start?
Well, first we have to tap into what's going on with them. And this is where I think it's critical. Remember how I said that foundation is building loyalty?
Yep.
Well, you can't build the loyalty if you don't get to know them.
Right.
So that's first step. We have to get to know one another. You know, just about all the positions that I've taken, my first assignment in that job, after finding three priorities on what my boss wanted me to accomplish, right, over the next 90 days, I would always ask, what are the top three things you want to see me do over the next first 90 days? After getting that, I would always schedule one-on-ones, short one-on-ones with every employee, you know, under my direction. And I just wanted to talk to them and tell them who I am, what I'm about, understand who they are, what they're about, get their expectations of me, and help them to understand my expectations. And my expectations were pretty simple, you know, treat everybody with dignity and respect, and, you know, strive to work hard, you know. But, you know, that was, you know, that's where it starts, is forming that relationship with those individuals first to get to know them. Because if you don't, they're not going to open up. So you're never going to get to the core of what's bothering them. And you can't develop someone if you don't get to the core. And that's the
Right.
problem, is that people always look at what they see on the outside. You know, there's a saying that says that if you look at a man or a woman as what they have on the inside, they can't get any better. But if you look at what they have on the inside, they can be great. And you see that supervisor didn't see what was on the inside of me. And so I have to make it a essential requirement that I understand what's on the inside of people when I'm working with them.
Yep,
Know, because
absolutely.
then I know how to inspire them. I know how to motivate them. I know how to tie into what they really want. You
Yeah.
know, how can I tie that to the goal of what we're trying to accomplish together? And more importantly, how can I help them achieve that? Because if I'm
Right.
helping them, if I have it in my heart to really help them achieve what they want to accomplish, they're going to help me. That's just the way it works. But too many times I've seen where that's not the case. It's all about helping the company, right? And that's why companies are having a difficult time now.
Well, you can't run a company with just the people at the top. That's for sure.
Oh, not. So to sum up what you said, I would say number one, get to know the person. Number two, find out, you know, in getting to know them, find out what the core issue is, what's bothering them, and get to the root of that. And then once you address that and put tools in place to help that individual, then you can start working with them and building their confidence on developmental things. I went through a training class once in the corporate world. They spent like hundreds of thousands of dollars training in all the different places I work and the training sessions that I've gone through, where they said that when a person is stressed out and they have anxiety and pressure, it's because they don't have a plan. So anytime you're stressed out in anything in life going forward, put a plan together. Find somebody to talk to try and create a plan. Because once you have that plan, it does two things. It takes your mind off of it because you immediately start executing it. And two, it immediately builds your confidence in that, okay, I see a way out. Okay. So for those individuals, once we sit down, we figure out what the root cause is, what's bothering them, and we put steps in place, now they have a plan. And that automatically gets the ball rolling in building your confidence.
Yep, a
I have
plan and
to,
purpose. Love
yeah,
it.
I talked a little bit about what I do for individuals, but I have a whole course around what I call leadership worth and self-worth. And on the self-worth spectrum, there's a spectrum that I have in there where I actually do an assessment to figure out where you are. And once we pinpoint where you are, then we work with you on how to get to the middle. Because what you want to do is be in the middle. On one end of the spectrum, you have people that are really, really narcissistic and arrogant and self-absorbed, right? It's all about them. And then on the other end, you have people that are depleted. Self-esteem is really low. Confidence is low, right? And what you want to do is you want to figure out where they are on that spectrum. And wherever they are, you start migrating and moving them and building their confidence towards the middle. Right. So on one end, you're building the confidence towards the middle. And on the other end, you're taking them from being this person who is kind of self-absorbed to seeing that people see you a different way. Because the goal is for you to see yourself how the world sees you. And people that are narcissistic, they see the world different than what people see them. Right. So the goal is to move towards the center in that aspect. So those three things I would say helped an individual who is struggling.
Very good.
Some
And I love, and for the people out there listening in the leadership, it could be high up in the leadership role or low down in the leadership role. Take that example that you gave, because it was like you basically almost teared up when you said that example. And think, keep that in the back of your mind about how you make your people feel. Because it's so just that one comment about, you know, why don't you shoot for something that's a little more realistic? Because I think that's the problem. You know, people are afraid to dream big because when they do, they get knocked down. But you know, people don't have that belief in themselves that they can do anything. I mean, you probably became vice president of how many companies, right? Right? And you're probably laughing.
it was definitely a key, because I was able to build a lot of loyalty. And that's one of the reasons that not only in all of the positions that I was in, I was able to do a phenomenal job at exceeding performance amongst my peers. But it was because I always knew that I would get more loyalty from my people, that my people would buy into whatever I'm saying more than anyone else. And because no one is going to form a closer bond with their people than me. And that's how I looked at it. No one, no one, no one. And I would even tell my directors that reported to me that I should not be able to go into your area where you're leading your people and have more influence than you. You're with them every day. I shouldn't be able to influence them more than you. And so I took great pride in that. Like I wouldn't, you know, for me, my boss wouldn't have more influence over my people than me. That's just how I looked at it.
Yeah.
And that's why I was able to accomplish so many things. And, you know, when I talk about the accomplishments, it's not just in one area, right? I worked in multiple industries, across multiple industries, across multiple verticals and different jobs. Like I've run operational facilities. I've headed up sales divisions. I've, you know, built call centers. So there's many different genres, but the basic fundamentals of leading people don't change.
No, never do.
Right. And then the last thing I will say about that is this, you know, we talked a lot about leadership management, the corporate world and all of that, but people got to understand that there are leaders all outside of that. Because here's why. My first experience with a leader was my father. He wasn't in a corporate position, right? But that was my first experience with the lead. He led our family, right? Now I'm you know, I give examples of how he led it, right? And it might not have been so good in some cases, and in some cases it was really good because of the things that he provided me and gave me with, right? He did teach us about respect and dignity and pride and honor, right? He did teach us about those things. And that's one of the reasons why when I was faced with that situation, I was able to say, no, I'm not going to accept that. And a lot of times that's hard to do because you're looking at someone who's been there, who's done it, they're in an elevated position, and you think that that's how you have to behave to move up. And I've seen a lot of people do that and make that mistake. And, you know, so leadership is all around us. You know, if you are a parent, you are a leader. If you have friends, you are a leader, right? So, you know, and we never know when we're going to be called upon to perform that job as a leader, right? When you're a parent, it's every day, right?
Right.
When you're amongst your friends, you might go on vacation and you might be the person who they consider is the most introvert. But let a situation arise where it's in your wheelhouse of expertise on what you do on your job every day. I guarantee you, those other extroverts are going to come to you and seek your advice, your counsel. So you see, we all are in leadership positions. That's why this is so critical.
Right. Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. I love it. Well, this has been awesome. I could talk all day to you, but before we go, I was getting ready to start another topic and then I'm like, okay, I'm not going to do that. But before we go, if people want to work with you, one-on-one, corporations, whatever it is, what is the best place to find you?
The best place to find me is simple. www.bookwithrodney.com. And that's my scheduler. You can book a 20-minute free consultation. We can talk about whatever you want. You know, as I said, I coach individuals. I coach in corporations. I do workshops. I do offsite events, keynote speaking as well. You know, I didn't want to leave that out. But it's bookwithrodney.com. bookwithrodney.com. It's simple.
Perfect. And we will put that in the links in the show notes and all that stuff anyway, so they can click on it in case they're driving and don't have time to write it down. But thank you so much. And before you leave, can you leave us with, I mean, you've given us so many golden nuggets, but some words of advice or words of wisdom for the people out there listening.
Let's see. Your character is important. So I'll leave you with this poem. You got it from your father. It was all he had to give. So make sure you guard it wisely for as long as you may live. If you lose the watch he gave you, it can always be replaced. But a black mark on your name, son, can never be erased. Now, it was clean the day you took it and a worthy name to bear. When your father got it from his father, there was no dishonest there. So make sure you got it wisely after all is said and done. You will be glad someday when it's time to give it to your son.
Absolutely love it. Thank you so much for coming on, Rodney.
Thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed it and wishing you the best.
That was great. I'm going to have to go back and listen to that about 8 more times. Did you write that?
No, I actually read it in a book. I read it in a book probably about 25, 30 years ago. It was anonymous. So I don't know who the author is, but it was so touching to me that I memorized it.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay. And for everybody out there listening, you heard it. That's Rodney Lawson. And look him up for sure. And we will see you back next week with other stories of hope and healing. Thanks so much for joining me today on the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast. If this episode resonated with you, or you think someone else could benefit from what you heard, why not share it with someone you care about? Let's heal from our past and take back control of our lives together. If you're interested in learning more, head on over to www.tammyvincent.com for a free chapter of my book, Surviving Alcoholic Parents. While you're there, be sure to catch my invigorating seminar, Awakening Your Authentic Self. Together, we will rewrite our stories and turn trials into triumphant smiles. Until next time, keep embracing your strength, keep being you, and know that you are more than enough. You are way more than enough right here, right now.